What a way to start. And I heard that y'all like an extra long service on Mother's Day, so I got a nice 75-minute talk. I hope that's not. I wouldn't do that to y'all. So even though we are new to each other, I do feel a connection with this community through Mindy Odlin, who was the first spiritual leader in this building. Yes, Mindy came to Unity of Houston about 5 years ago and helped us implement the Spirit Groups program, which is a small group program that she created. And I am the program director of that. And I just have to tell you that the work that she helped us do has really helped our community sustain through the pandemic and even flourish, because what has happened in those groups is that people come together and they walk each other through difficulties while holding the high watch for one another. And that brings me to one of the things that I love the most about our Unity teachings, and that is that we start with a very bold foundational claim as our first principle, and that is that there's one presence, one power, God the good, everywhere present, right? God, divine intelligence, divine love, whatever word that you have, that is all there is, and nothing exists outside of that. And two, though, we also make room for our human experience, right? We're having a very real human experience on this planet right now in these bodies, making our way through life. We experience challenges, right? And so on Mother's Day, we can celebrate. We can celebrate the divine feminine. We can celebrate the way, and the divine feminine really is nothing more or nothing less than certain capacities and qualities of God. And so we can celebrate that and its infinite birthing of all things, of creating of all things, of accepting all things, of the non-grasping, non-controlling, non-interference of all things. And we can make room for our human experience of motherhood too. We can give thanks for the mothers in our lives. We can give thanks for our experience of being able to nurture people, right? And we can also hold the truth that of the billions of us on this planet, if each one of us were to tell the story of our relationship with the word mother, we'd have 8 billion different stories, right? Because we've all had unique experiences, and that changed throughout our life. And the beautiful thing about the divine feminine is that it holds it all. There is nothing excluded, nothing left out, no one is forgotten, and nothing is left undone. And so, excuse me, Houston allergies, by the way, have just kind of wreaked havoc on my voice a little bit. And so one of the things about the divine feminine is that it encourages us to realize that when we tap into this energy, that we know that we are creative forces, we know that ourselves to be creative beings, right, in unity, that it's not about creating and then grasping and controlling the outcome of how everything, right? That's kind of our human tendency. Okay, we've got something really great here, now let me control every little bit of it so it ends up exactly like I want it, right? Sound familiar? Maybe it's just me. And we really love and venerate productivity and quantifiable metrics and all these things. Wonderful. There's nothing wrong with that. And what I've noticed in my own effort to be productive, I don't know if this has ever happened to you, that other people's idea of productivity sometimes interrupts my own productivity, right? Through texts and voicemails and, you know, video calls and Zoom meetings and regular meetings and bathroom meetings and can I grab you for just a second kind of meetings, right? And so one of the things that I like to do when I really need to focus, right, I'm really going to get in focus mode, is I put my phone away, turn off my email notifications, and I have a YouTube video that's for concentration, and it's one of those that makes it sound like, mwah, mwah. It's much more beautiful, right, than that. Plays that nice sound. I can tune everything out. So one day, several months ago, I'm being so productive, and I've got my concentration music, right? And then all of a sudden, I heard a voice. Now, just to be clear, this was not a burning bush moment kind of voice. This was simply a voice that was coming out of my computer speakers because, you know, YouTube, in its infinite wisdom, decided to start the next video, which was Sadhguru, who is a yogi and mystic, who I listen to his videos sometimes, and he said this. He said, "You have no choice. You must fall in love with everyone." And I thought, oh, is that for me? That's not for me. And you know, there's a lot of interesting things out on YouTube. You know, that's where I learned how to cut a mango. I've also seen some things that have disturbed me greatly, right? I have to think, what if we had YouTube when Jesus was around? What would his videos be like? Can you just imagine like the apostles uploading these, you know, oh, here's a healing. Like, and I'm thinking, based on what I've seen of all his miracles, would it be when he rose his friend from the dead that got the most views, or when he turned water into wine for a party that would get the most views and likes? I'm thinking it might be that one, right? But I digress. Back to Sadhguru. He said, you have no choice. You must love everyone. And let me make something else clear. I don't just do everything the voice from my computer tells me to do. Especially recently, YouTube has quite offended me with a lot of the ads I've gotten about women over 50, stop wearing this. And I'm like, come on, let me enjoy the last little bit of my 40s before you tell me what not to wear. So anyway, we must fall in love with everyone. And it's an interesting message. Why was it rattling around in me so much is what I thought to myself, because we know this, right? We know we're supposed to love everybody, right? Even with all those personalities, yes, yes, we know we're supposed to love everybody. But I just couldn't let go. What is this idea of falling? What would that look like, falling in love with everyone? So like any good ministerial student, I ran straight to the revealing word to see what Charles Fillmore had to say. And as we know, Charles had a lot to say about a lot of things. But I love what he had to say about love. He said that divine love is the pure essence that binds together the whole human family. And he said that kind of love is impersonal. That's kind of a weird word, right? That kind of love is impersonal, and it loves for the sake of loving. So this is really the essence of what the divine feminine is all about. This loving for the sake of loving, this pure essence, this love that because it is in the very nature of who we are, it just emerges from us. There's nothing we have to do to create it. It is our very essence. So I invite you to think maybe about a time that you've been in a room with a newborn baby, fairly newborn baby, right? And all the adults are gathered around. Literally, that baby can do anything and everybody's amazed. That baby can yawn and everybody's like, did you see that yawn? That is the best yawn I've ever seen. That baby can see, oh, everybody, do you see how strong this baby? Did you feel how strong they were? With that? You know, everybody's amazed by the baby. I'm going to guess that you've never beheld a newborn infant and looked into those eyes, this eyes of this newly incarnated human being who's purely innocent, has yet to experience any of what it is to be a human on this planet. I'm going to guess that you've never looked at that baby and thought, you know, I'm going to wait to see how this one turns out before I love it. I'm just going to think about it. I need to see whose personality. If he's kind of like my, you know, brother-in-law, I'm just going to hang back and see how this one turns out, right? We don't think that because something naturally arises in us. We are able to meet that baby human to human, soul to soul. We recognize the divine essence that is being reflected back to us. That's our own essence, right? And so this is part of the divine feminine, this love that arises naturally. So the second piece that Charles talked about when he talked about love was that it's impersonal, which seems like a word that doesn't resonate, right, with the word love, because love for us is very personal, extremely personal, right? But we can think of impersonal in this way, as beyond the personal, beyond the personality, beyond the field, as Marie says, of right and wrong, that's where I'll meet you, beyond deserving, beyond merit, that we don't need to wait to see how things are going to turn out before we can love our life, right? And so that's what's happening with that baby in that experience. And so then the third piece of it is loving for the sake of loving. And this is my favorite, because this is also kind of a little bit challenging, because we have to come to the realization, if we're going to love just for the sake of loving, that guess what? Not everybody in our life is an improvement project for us. Your friends and your family members are not fixer-uppers, right? And even maybe more challenging than that is that we have to realize that we ourselves are not just some DIY project that we get to spend several decades with, never to be finished, never to be completed, just hammering it out, improving this, losing that. You know, we can release that idea. And as Ramaya said so beautifully in the prayer, love ourselves just for the sake of loving ourselves. There's nothing that we need to do to earn or deserve it. And so I think about, I am a mother of two adultish children. My son is 27, and we also have a 21-year-old. And so when they were about 4 and 10, we moved to Singapore. We lived there for 6 years. And it was a wonderful place to live with children in many ways. Our kids got to go to a school that was an international school that had kids from 80 different countries. It was beyond amazing. The food was great. But if you know anything about Singapore, and if you've heard anything about Singapore, it's probably that they have very strict laws about a lot of things. I mean, when we were there, you couldn't chew gum. That was against the law. And if you wanted to chew gum, you could technically, but you had to go to the doctor, get a prescription for the gum, say that you were trying to quit smoking. You'd have to go to the pharmacist, show your ID. They would release one packet of gum. Thank you very much. Don't come back and ask for more, right? Limited quantity. So that's kind of a quirky one, but there were some many more serious laws, right? And serious punishments for that. So much so that when your child gets into high school over there and you're in an expatriate school like we were, that they have an attorney come to talk to you about how serious it is if your kid gets picked up for loitering, for gathering. There are many things that you can get in trouble for. So you can imagine how much this comforted me as the mother of a teenage boy, right? Oh, I loved it. So I had this tension, so that started playing up a little bit of fear. Add to that the tension of, and maybe you can relate as parents, grandparents, friends, uncles, aunts, that there's something when a child is coming of that age, of a teenager, that we start to become very invested of what they are doing, how they are experiencing life is a reflection, oh no, on us, on how we have parented, on what we have done. So I'm dealing with my own, if he does this, this means I didn't teach him that right, right? All that stuff started coming up. And to add to that too, his own natural, innate, inherent need to test boundaries, to see where the edges were, to challenge, right? We've all been teenagers. You got to do that. That's part of it. That's part of growing up, making our mistakes and learning from them. But I couldn't sit with this tension. I found myself very anxious about it. And so one day I was like, okay, I'm stewing about this enough. He had gotten in trouble for something, bending a spoon. You remember that one? My husband's here at school. And I thought, oh, good Lord, what's he going to do? It's bending a spoon in Singapore. I don't know. That might get him 5 years in prison. I don't know at this point. So I'm feeling anxious about it. And I found a teaching Course in Miracles that says, you know, it's very simple. Help me see this differently. And I know. And when I get wrapped up in my mind and I've thought about it from every single angle, I know what I need is to see something differently. And I had this really clear moment that I realized that intellectually, I know that my son, he needed to learn his own lessons. He needed to make mistakes. That paper needed to fly off the podium just now. These things needed to happen, right? But on some level, I wanted to pick the mistakes he was making. I wanted to choose what lessons he needed to learn and how he needed to learn them. I wanted to protect him from that. And the moment that I was willing to let go of that, I became a lot more clear. He didn't suddenly stop challenging things. Worrying didn't go away overnight. But it was that realization that, oh my goodness, if I am a human, that my soul is set for spiritual enlightenment, and I know that I receive the lessons that I need in order to do so, I have to know this is the truth for him. I can guide, I can direct, I can support, I can encourage, and that is what is mine to do, not to control, right? So that was a big one for me. Let's see what flew. I'm just going to ignore what flew off. So I want to share with you a little bit that when I say that nothing gets left undone in this way, it wasn't that I suddenly, you know, stopped parenting my son or that when things start going awry that we suddenly don't have to do anything anymore. It's trusting in the process that if we release control of what is not ours to do, that things will emerge in the way that they need to emerge, right? That we can't possibly know what's best. Have you ever had the experience you don't know what's best for yourself? And yet we sometimes assume that we know what the best is for other people. Why not, right? Maybe if I don't know for myself, I can know for you. So Some of you might be familiar. One of the things I wanted to bring into this talk is a little teaching from the Tao Te Ching. And some of you are probably familiar with the Tao. I'm no expert on the Tao, but I have come to love it for its teachings. One of my favorite translations is by Stephen Mitchell. And for him, he talks about the Tao as being one of the religions that best represents the feminine nature of the divine. And that is because in the Tao Te Ching, the underlying principle of it is wu wei or wu wei wu, non-action or doing by not doing. Okay? And so this isn't a, oh, we just sit on our chairs and meditate and not do. This is a being in the moment where it feels like you need to do stuff. It feels like you need to make this right. It feels like if I just get in there and fix this, then everything will be okay. And instead, tapping into what is really mine to do here, what is really being called for. Am I acting from a place of fear or scarcity? Or am I acting from the overflow of my pure essence of love, which I am at my core, right? And so one of the verses that I want to share with you from the Tao Te Ching, it's a pretty short book. It's about 81. They're called chapters, but they're really just only tiny. They think that the Tao Te Ching, so they say, was written by a man called Lao Tzu at the time of Confucius, but we don't really know if he existed. I love that in one of the books that I have, it says, about the author Lao Tzu, nothing much can be said. Because we don't even know if he was maybe an amalgamation of several teachers at the time. But the truths that have been distilled in several translations speak to the way to live life in a way that you are in harmony with what is happening. That you are embodying this divine feminine aspect of we are in a creative process, yes. We love what we are able to create, and then we let it go. And we accept and honor our creations for what they are here to be without the need to control or grasp. So I'd like to read this verse to you from the Tao. And this chapter, if it feels comfortable for you, I just invite you to kind of go within. You can close your eyes if you'd like to. Just settle in. And when I speak the word Tao, which is translated to the way, feel free to substitute any word that you have for the divine that you're comfortable with, because that's all it is. So, every being in the universe and is an expression of the Tao. It springs into existence, unconscious, perfect, free. It takes on a physical body and lets circumstances complete it. That is why every being spontaneously honors the Tao. The Tao gives birth to all beings, nourishes them, maintains them, cares for them, comforts them, protects them, and takes them back to itself. Acting without expecting, guiding without interfering, creating without possessing. That is why the love of the Tao is in the very nature of all things. Isn't that beautiful? So this idea that we can create without the energy of possessing, that we can guide, right? We can always guide, and that doesn't equal interference. And it takes discernment to know that line over and over again. And that we can act without expecting. So we love for the sake of loving, and nothing gets left undone. And so now, flew through that. See, I promised you all a long one. Maybe we'll meditate for an hour. I'd like to take us into a meditation, if that feels comfortable for you. So let's just go back into that space that we were in just a moment ago. And let's just allow ourselves the luxury of a couple of really nice, deep, luxurious breaths. Just really settling into the breath. And notice your breath. We don't try to control it. Don't try to predict when the next one will come. Don't try to cling to this one. Just allow. And what we know in this moment is that this breath, just like every breath that you have taken since the time you have been born, and every breath that will continue for the rest of your life, is freely given. There is absolutely nothing you can do to become more worthy or less worthy than of your next breath. It is divine love that is breathing you, supporting you, breathing its life so it, you can express as it. And so I invite you to consider that with this same non-transactional, unconditional way that you are being breathed, that you are being loved in that same way. That you are loved infinitely, eternally, without question, in every moment of your life. That there's nothing for you to do to become more worthy of this love, that simply as you know, you're whole, perfect, and complete in the eyes of the divine. And I invite you, are you willing to consider that you are opening yourself up to a greater experience of this? That all of the love you've experienced up until this point has been but a fraction of what the divine wants to imbue upon you. And so in this realization of how we are held in love, and how our very essence is love, I invite you to call to mind someone that has accepted you for who you are in a moment where you most desperately needed that. Call to mind someone who has nourished you, nurtured you, loved you without expecting, guided you without interfering. Allow yourself to radiate love to this other being in gratitude for the care, for the empowerment, for the encouragement that they've shown you. Now we take a moment to radiate that love beyond this space that we inhabit, out into the world, seeing all of our brothers and sisters in an experience of knowing the truth of who they are, of coming home to the reality that love is the pure essence that binds together the human family. That we can trust in our innate desire to love for the sake of loving. And that nothing will get left undone. And so it is. Mm-hmm.